Next time you need auto parts and accessories, trust the parts professionals at the 63 Salt Lake City O'Reilly Auto Parts stores. Our professional parts people know what it takes to get the job done right. Professionals have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for decades. Now you can too. Professional parts people. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to this show.
Of course. But that's the name football, of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got in my population. But it makes your race glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest stories. More so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Where will you? You listen to the podcast too, and you rant about the podcast too. Just a thought, we're German and love to master. And kiss the skin, the pressure. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Ashton, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to the podcast too. You love this podcast too.
We are live. It is me, Chris Andros at Greek Padre, and Matt K for Fresno State. That's at Matt K underscore FF. He will be joining us in a few minutes. He's getting his computer stuff set up. Welcome to the show, Mountain West Connection Podcast, www.mwcconnection.com. I assume people can hear me, but if anybody's listening live and wants to tell me, hey, we can't hear you, that'd be appreciative. If not, I'm just going to continue. So we're going over our 2015 Fresno State football preview today, which is going to be pretty awesome because, you know, we're gonna be seeing in our preseason polls, our writers kind of took the liberty of ranking Fresno State sixth in the conference, which is, you know, six is half of 12, so they're in the middle. So how good or how bad can Fresno State be? And that's one of the things that we're going to be trying to figure out tonight. So we got a good show for you planned out. Once Matt K comes on here in just momentarily, hopefully, one of the things that we're going to be doing is we're going to be playing a fun game called the best team in Mountain West football history. Matt wrote an article about what the best team of history was. Hopefully a lot of you have been able to see it. Hopefully a lot of you have been able to vote. You know, and if not, go read the article right now and go vote. It's on the front page. It's either the first or second slot that you see when the page comes up. So, you know, do us a favor. Rank it. See who really is. Piss everybody off by, you know, voting that the 2012 San Jose State Spartans were the best in history. Or, you know, yeah, there's, I'll be honest, my top three, and I'll probably repeat this, my top three are the 2008 Utah team, the 2010 TCU team, and now I'll go ahead and give one out to the 2011 TCU team as well. I think those three teams are probably going to be a good bid to who really is the best. And so, yeah, maybe we're going to be Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe Matt will show me up. But also, in the meantime, we have a few different things going on in the world of sports. American Pharoah won the Triple Crown, first time since 1978, so 37 years since the last time a horse has won the Triple Crown, which means still American Pharoah has done the one thing that Nick Saban hasn't done. And yes, I did steal that joke. Yeah. What does this mean significantly for in the world of sports? How rare is the Triple Crown? It's one of those things that you can look at it in the sense that it's like taking a team, such as Utah or TCU or even Boise State for this matter, right? And allowing them in the national championship and then letting them win the national championship. That's kind of the rarity that we're seeing. But hey, Chris, it only hasn't been done in 37 years. Well, if you also remember that we had teams like Army winning the national championship in the mid 1940s. So it's all perspective here. Other things going on in sports, our U.S. women's team, shout out to them. They play tomorrow against Australia, who's looking to be a good Australia team. So we'll see how Jill Ellis' team fares. In the Mountain West news, I'm still waiting for Matt to come on. Yes, no, nobody's signing on yet. In Mountain West news, I told you guys about the Mountain West football team, best team in the history of the Mountain West, no matter what. Interesting other article, though. Ben Mitchum, one of our Wyoming writers, wrote some cool article about how the Wyoming coaching staff has taken advantage of satellite camps. So we knew how the SEC was kind of complaining about satellite camps and the Big Ten were using them. Wyoming is kind of using satellite camps their own advantage, right, for recruiting possibilities. It seems like that's kind of within Craig Bohl's reign, right? He's a former North Dakota State guy, used to be at Nebraska beforehand, and really, you know, can use sort of these outside camps to bring in recruits who normally wouldn't come to altitude that high, right? So that's kind of a cool thing. Other news throughout the week, Brian Urlacher, New Mexico Lobo, he is on the College Football Hall of Fame ballot. So if we could get votes for him, that will be a Mountain Wester in the College Football Hall of Fame to join the ranks of – well, Chris Salt is the only one I can think of right now. Mountain West pays out record $46 million to member schools. Boise State getting the biggest piece of the pie, which everybody complains about. But, hey, you know what? Until more people... Well, that was interesting. Looks like I locked myself out. Oh, boy. this is going just spectacular. Let's nobody tell that Jeremy that I'm screwing up and really my first time managing. It really isn't my first time. It's my first time using Blog Talk Radio, so sucks for you guys. In the meantime, I guess, since there's nothing else really to talk about right now, we can go over to Fresno State preview. And damn it, Matt, where the hell are you? Why the hell not? I'll just kind of go on. So Fresno State looking from kind of a weird year last year. They went through three quarterbacks last year. They had Brian, what's his face? And then the other dude from Duke. And then, Brian Burrell. And then Brandon Connett from Duke. And then they had Zach Greenlee for a little bit last year. But really, outside of that, it just kind of was like a cluster last year, and they were okay. They ended up 6-7 after the loss to Boise State in the championship game, and then ended up 6-8 after a humiliating loss to Rice in the Hawaii Bowl. But we don't like to talk about that. So what is up with hey, look, I got somebody on.
Yeah, I apologize for the delay. My laptop is being the worst right now.
It's Matt. Say hi, Matt.
Howdy, Internet.
Hi, Internet.
Oh, I can hear you just fine.
We can't hear you. Okay, cool. So if you could not hear me rambling randomly for the last 10 minutes or so, I went into a little bit of what the best team in the Mountain West history was, and then some other news. But since you're the one who wrote the article, I guess we'll take a break from my random Fresno State preview. And you can go ahead and tell me, who was the best team in Mountain West history?
Well, I mean, when I approached the exercise, I tried to make the argument for I've been a little more broad with teams that I think could have an argument as the best team in Mountain West history. So I think what would be more interesting is I give you my list and you tell me whether you think the team has an argument as, like, maybe not the best, but let's say if they have an argument for, like, being a top 10 Mountain West team, would you be game?
Okay.
All right, so hold on a second. I got to wait for the spreadsheet to load now. I apologize. But what I will tell you while it's loading, fingers crossed, is that I took a few different teams, not just the ones that everybody thinks of, and it looks like it's finally cooperating. So let me go ahead and just start from the top. We'll do it in alphabetical order by team. So let me just give you the 2010 Air Force Falcons. Yes or no, it's a possible top 10 Mountain West team.
Okay.
2014 Air Force Falcons.
Ooh.
Last year's Falcons.
Yeah. I'm going to go with no, but I'd put them easily in the top 15.
Okay. All right. So then I listed two for Boise State. The two I chose were 2011 and 2014.
I'll go with both of those.
So you say yes?
Yes.
Okay, so then BYU, I wrote down 2001 and 2007.
Yeah, those are probably the last two times where BYU and BYU fans are going to get so mad at me, but they probably don't listen to the podcast anyway. Those are probably, especially that 2001 BYU team, that's probably the last time they were seriously relevant. 2007.
All right, so then Colorado State. This one I think most people might find interesting. I put 2000 and 2002.
I'll totally go there. Yeah, no, I'll agree. I can go ahead and give an argument, though, for the 1999, the first Colorado State team, because I believe they shared that title, correct? Or was that New Mexico?
Yeah, I believe you are correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I put the 2013 Fresno State Bulldogs.
Okay.
With apologies to Hawaii and Nevada, I didn't list any of those teams. And then I listed, this one's kind of like the darkest of dark horses, but hear me out. I put the 2007 New Mexico Lobos.
Okay, interesting.
They had a really good defense that year, and it carried them, you know, pretty close to a conference title. I'm not saying they're the best, but would you say that that team had a top 10, possibly?
Yeah. It's interesting to know, because this New Mexico team finished third in the conference, but finished 9-4 overall, and really they beat Arizona, lost to BYU, which was kind of a shame, lost to TCU in a complete blowout, so that kind of goes for their good offense. So really, they lost the teams they were supposed to lose to, with the exception of UTEP. And they, you know, you had a nice little win over Arizona. And then a blowout win over Nevada in the New Mexico Bowl. I could
see
that.
Yeah, that was pretty much my thought process.
But I could see them being more of one of the best New Mexico teams. I'm not sure I would put them top 10 in Mountain West history.
And that's fair. Okay, so then San Diego State, I put the 2010 Aztecs.
Okay. Any particular reason why?
It just seemed to me like if I had to choose one team, because I was limiting myself to, I think it was 15 teams altogether, and I couldn't really justify choosing the 2013 Aztecs or rather the 2012 Aztecs that took a share of the title. To me, just kind of looking at it from an objective point of view, it seemed like the 2010 team was a little bit better.
Okay.
And then,
once again, the only thing worth of note that Aztecs team did was they beat a ranked Air Force team.
And then, of course, there were no San Jose State teams to speak of. TCU, I put 2009 and 2010.
Okay, is that the same thing as the 2010 and 2011 TCU teams?
Well, I mean, they won the division, or they won the conference 3 years in a row, 09, 10, and 11. And of those three teams, I chose 09 and 10.
Okay. Gotcha.
And
all
then,
right.
Obviously, there were no UNLV teams. Sorry.
That's fine. Yeah.
I know you're heartbroken about that.
You know,
Utah.
The only thing worth of noting is that 1 year John Robinson was like 8-5, right?
Well, I mean, you could possibly, if you really wanted to try and construct an argument, is a couple of years ago when they went 8-5 and went to a bowl.
Yeah.
Utah Utes, I put, that was pretty simple. I put 2004 and 2008.
Okay.
And then I put Utah State as my last one, last year's Utah State team.
A very good team. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So those were my picks. But those are like the broad argument. As far as the results look so far, which are about 50 people and counting, it seems like a lot of people are stricter than I am, and they're coalescing around the really obvious ones, so we'll see how that turns out.
Well, I can tell you that I probably gave the really obvious ones. I gave my top three teams. I didn't go all the way to 10, but, you know, if I went to 10, I'd probably have to think about that a little bit more. But my top three teams were easily the 2010 TCU team, the 2008 Utah team, and then the 2011 TCU team.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I had to go down a little bit more, and if I were to kind of be a little bit more liberal, just like how you kind of tried to choose at least two teams from each school, or really, you know, be more versatile, I'd have to kind of put more thought into it. But yeah, I could see arguments, with the exception of a couple, I could see arguments for everybody that you gave.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I can see how the 2009 team should be. What?
At least looking at the voting, what I think is really interesting is because I put a question on there, you know, what team do you primarily root for? And so far, it seems like there's been a lot of Boise State fans showing up for the Broncos, and there's been a lot of Utes fans showing up for Utah. And so it's going to be really interesting to see if other teams step up, because as of right now, there's been exactly one person who's a Colorado State fan that's voted. I believe there's been one person that's an Aztecs fan that's voted, one person that's a BYU fan that's voted. And so what I'm really hoping for with this little project is that I can reach out to these fans who are probably on these other blogs at this point and really kind of bring them in and make the argument for their team. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll be honest, I'll be voting as a Boise State fan. But I'm in the top 10, I could see one or two Boise State teams being on there. But in the top three or top five, I'm not sure I can put a Boise State team in the top Mountain West teams of all time.
That's fair.
So let's go ahead, because I've been rambling around for long enough, and we've got about 38 minutes left of live. Fresno State football.
not great last year.
Not great last year. 6-8, as I was mentioning. They surged a nice comeback to make the championship game.
Yeah, I think that was more. That may have been more about San Diego State, you know, not quarterback went down than Fresno State being real opportunistic. Because, I mean, I could have made the argument that they didn't really deserve to be there, considering some of the losses that they had last year. And when you consider that a lot of those really important pieces have moved on, either to the professional ranks or because of graduation, this year is really going to be a mystery. They're going to have an uphill climb, I think, just to get to bowl eligibility.
So let me ask you this. So first of all, what do you feel about the writers ranking Fresno State 6?
I was a little bit surprised by that, if only because I wish I could remember my own rankings, but off the top of my head, I think I had them either 8th or 9th, just because I remember when I did the predictions podcast with you and Jeremy last year, my initial gut feeling was that San Diego State would win the division. And I remember going on that podcast and changing my mind and predicting that Fresno State, you know, with an uncertain quarterback situation, with, you know, uncertainties on defense, that they would, I think I said they would win 8 games or 9 games and win the division. And, you know, I was half right, but they have a lot of those same questions going into this year. And so, you know, when I saw that, I was honestly kind of shocked because I was a little more pessimistic about my own team.
Interesting. Okay. So let's go to the staff. Let's go to the team itself. Are we presuming that Zach Greinley is going to be the starter this year? He's the most experienced guy, doesn't have a lot of experience, even though he's a sophomore. Showed some hope last year, but really needs to improve on that completion percentage.
Well, you know, what you hope for is that he can win the job so that they don't end up in a situation like they were last year, where they didn't name a starter until the day before, or actually I think the day of the USC game. And then they went and got trounced, obviously. But, you know, if they had to name a starter right now, my intuition is that, yeah, they probably would name Greinley. Not only because he's the one guy who has the most experience in the offense, he's the only signal caller with any real game experience, even though, you know, a lot of that was real mixed results. He really stood out to me when I went to saw him in the spring showcase, which I believe I told you guys the last time I was on. And he's the most highly touted of the three guys in the competition. You know, Tilton Anderson, you know, he was able to redshirt and learn a little bit last year. And Chasen Virgil obviously is a, you know, very talented true freshman quarterback. But I think I would be really surprised if either of those guys had a shot at starting a job at this point.
Yeah, and a lot of this I know that you're going to be repeating from stuff you saw from spring practice, but it's kind of a nice little refresher. And Greinley should be the guy. He's got the reps. He obviously looked the strongest out of all the guys in spring camp. So moving on to the running back position, we know Martez Waller is going to get all the carries, and he should get all the carries. It seems like the most successful Fresno State games last year were when Martez Waller was having success running on the ground. And he racked up 1,368 yards, 11 touchdowns. But the question becomes, obviously he's going to be the primary back, but who's going to follow him? You have Quezada, you have Burrell, Connett, Thomas, Greinley. You have a slew of guys who nobody's touched the ball. You have literally nobody who has touched the ball behind Waller except for Greinley.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those real subtle questions that nobody's really thinking about at this point. Because, you know, if Martez Waller gets hurt like he did when they overworked him last year, late in the year, you know, there's really only one guy behind him who's had any kind of game experience, and that's Malik Meisenheimer. And, you know, he's a guy that's come in on spot, you know, it's kind of like a change of pace back, and he's done really well. He's, you know, proven himself to be a capable, you know, outlet on the screen game. But, you know, once you get past those two, you know, Meisenheimer himself is recovering from an injury. So then you're getting into guys who are really unproven. Chris Maliga, who is a redshirt freshman, he got a lot of reps in the spring game, and he looked okay. Deontay O'Neill is another guy who might get a lot of action. But really, it's kind of up in the air. They only have five guys listed at running back on the roster at the moment. So, you know, that's one of those things I think we'll learn a little bit more about when we get into the fall.
Interesting, interesting. And this kind of comes back to me being a Boise State homer, whereas, you know, we don't have a starting court, a running back name, but we do have guys who have at least touched the ball somewhat last season. So it will be interesting to see from Waller to, you know, who follows him. Once again, receiving core, just as well. You have Aaron Peck, who I basically asked in the article, who the hell is Aaron Peck? And, you know, is he obviously is going to be your starting wide receiver, but, you know, who is he? He's not, you know, Isaiah Burse, or he's not Josh Harper. These guys who are basically going to be huge receptions. He really didn't do that much last year.
Well, I mean, I could tell you who he is right now. Right now, he's kind of the de facto number one receiver. And what I could also tell you is he's built like Devontae Adams. You know, he's the tallest guy in the receiving corps. He's at 6'3", and he's the biggest guy at 213 pounds. So the one guy that I had a lot of expectations for last year, I thought that he would be able to step up and be the new Josh Harper. Yeah, I can make the argument a lot of that wasn't his fault because it's not like the quarterbacks were terribly efficient. But, you know, when you look at his final numbers from a year ago, what I expected and what he produced were, you know, not close. I expected him to be, if not a 1,000-yard receiver, then at least very close. And he's one of those guys that, you know, ever since 2013, he's really been kind of a tantalizing talent. I remember, you know, in the Las Vegas Bowl versus SC, he got behind, I believe it was Josh Shaw, actually. And Derek Carr hit him right in the hand, dropped it. And that's really been one of those things that's, you know, it's, I wouldn't say it's an endemic problem, but it's one of those things where when you drop the big play like that, it stands out. And that's happened several times. And you wait for him to just make that jump. And I think that if the Bulldogs are going to be successful this year, he's going to have to be more consistent. You know, he's going to have a better catch rate than he did last year, which was under 55%.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that you said about Peck being built like Devontae Adams, if Greenlee is presumed to be the starter, if he could just throw the ball high enough, Peck should be able to come down with the ball, assuming he increases that completion percentage.
Exactly.
You know, so I better be expecting to see a lot of backyard football this summer.
Well, you would hope so, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to worry about the offensive line here because it seems like the offensive line is going to be fairly experienced coming back. You do lose Cody Wickman off the right guard, but it looks like you have more than enough replacements. And really, you know, a few guys who are already experienced, maybe not the primary guys who are experienced, but you having an experienced center, Bo Bonheim, will really help Greenlee with the snaps no matter what. So moving on, tell me something about this defense. Who's going to lead it? Who's going to be the bad guy?
I thought you were going to leave me an opening to say I hope it's better than it was last year. because, I mean, last year was really, really bad in retrospect. Like, I did a podcast yesterday with Block U where I went back and I looked at the highlights of the Utah game, and I forgot how bad the defense looked that afternoon, and that was really kind of emblematic of how they looked the entire season. You know, looking back at what they did on pass defense, you know, they were, I think, last in the Mountain West in, you know, quarterback rating allowed. You know, on average, they were making quarterbacks look like Bryce Petty all of last year. So what it comes down to is, you know, whether, you know, the games that they had late in the year when they were winning games, when they were locking down teams that they should be able to lock down, like Hawaii, and if I can remember who else they played late in the year, I think it was like Nevada and San Jose State, when they had that three-game win streak and the defense played its best ball of the season, that really came down to guys that were finally shuffled into the starting lineup and told, you know, just run with it. What that comes down to is that, you know, you have Charles Washington and Malcolm Washington, first of all, who are probably going to be your starting cornerbacks. You have Daylon Jones, who I've always really liked ever since he, you know, made himself known to Daryl Gerritsen in the 2013 championship game. You know, he might be the hardest hitter on the entire secondary. He's going to be expected to step up and take over at least one of the safety spots. And then you have other guys with, you know, bit roles like Stratton Brown and Shannon Edwards and Jamal Ellis, who, you know, given the offenses that you see in the Mountain West, are going to have to field the field quite a bit with all these spread offenses going around. You know, I really like a couple of these guys in the secondary. I really like Jones. I really like Malcolm Washington. I think that he played, you know, really well considering he was a true freshman, kind of thrust into the starting lineup late in the season. So I would expect him to take a big step forward. As far as the front seven, you really have to hope that the Giro Edirne can bounce back, although, you know, late in the year he wasn't 100%, and he still managed to rack up, you know, 12 and a half tackles for loss. They still have Kyrie Wilson, thankfully, who may have been, you know, one of the best overall players on the defense last year. Other than that, you kind of have big mysteries everywhere. You don't have a ready replacement for Tyler Davison. You don't have a ready replacement for Donovan Lewis, who may have been the best pass rusher on the team last year. And if they don't find guys to replace those two, you know, this is a defense that wants to be aggressive. And if they can't get to the quarterback, if they can't make plays coming at you from all angles, it's going to look like 2014 all over again, and that's not something that a lot of fans want to see.
No, absolutely not. And one of the things that that I'll go ahead and quote from Bill Connolly, everybody in the Mountain West has good linebackers. So who has the best linebackers? And this might be something that we might play the game later, is who has the best linebackers in the Mountain West? But really, does Fresno State have a claim to having the best linebackers in the Mountain West or even in the Western Division?
Well, I mean, it is another position where you have a lot of young talent that you would expect to be able to step into the starting lineup and try to hold their own. You know, you have guys, three-star recruits like Xavier Olutu and Michael Lazarus, who, you know, saw a little bit of playing time last year, but actually I believe they both got into, or maybe it was Lazarus who got into trouble and was suspended for the Hawaii Bowl. You know, both of those guys are going to be expected to take on a bigger role in the defense. You know, you have highly touted recruits like, you know, Stephen Van Hook, Robert Stanley, you know, other guys who, you know, they may not be on the field for more than a snap or two at a time, but, you know, they've placed an emphasis on recruiting athletes. So, yeah, you could make an argument that if they're not the best linebacking unit, they could be at least in the conversation.
Awesome, awesome. And so let's go ahead and move on to our fun, the most fun part of the podcast, especially in these previews, the schedule. So we start with Abilene Christian, who is, I guess, starting a football team and fielding, and so they're at FCS this year, and I'm sorry, not starting. They had a team last year. I actually have no clue about Abilene Christian. I think they're the ones who barely lost to Georgia State 49-48, right? Last year at the beginning of the season.
I have no idea. Off the top of my head, I don't know.
This shows how much football I've watched, is if I can still remember that Abilene Christian played Georgia State in the
in the first game of the college football season last year. This is ridiculous. So Fresno State plays Abilene Christian. Obviously, they should win, right?
Well, you don't want to take anything for granted.
Oh,
but,
come on.
You know what I'll say? What I'll say is it took them a while to get going against Southern Utah last year, and they were an FCS team that weren't all that great at season's end. So, yes, they probably should win, and I'll say that they will win, but, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it took them a little while to get going.
Okay, and so then you go, assuming a win at with Abilene Christian, then you travel to Oxford, Mississippi, to face the Landsharks, Ole Miss. Are we just predicting blood at this point? Can Fresno State show up for any non-conference game?
Yes. Maybe not this one, but yes. I mean, you know, you're going to have a few good vibes coming off of a win against an FCS team, but going to SEC country, especially now, you know, Mississippi's a really good team. You know, I told Block you yesterday, I wouldn't be surprised if they were in the, you know, playoff conversation at the end of the year. So, you know, whatever the line is, I guess I would assume it'll be high, and I would assume I would take the points when that time comes.
Yeah, the biggest problem with Ole Miss is that they don't have a quarterback, so we're not exactly sure where they're going to be. And, man, I was close. It was Georgia State beating Abilene Christian last year, 38-37. I just had to look that up to confirm myself.
That's impressive.
Then you did the podcast with Block U. It was last week, correct?
It was yesterday.
And so I assume you predicted a Fresno State upset at home?
No, I wish. I mean, I remember the game last year, and, you know, having looked at the highlights, kind of fresh in my mind. And, you know, even though they're losing a lot of pieces, especially off that defense, one thing that really stuck out to me last year and that I'm really going to be concerned about this year, especially early on, is their ability to hold up against really good pass rushes. And I'm expecting Ole Miss to have one, obviously. And I would assume that Utah, maybe they won't be quite as good as they were last year, but they're going to be a pretty formidable defense to try and solve.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're predicting loss. Is there any way that's going to be an upset win?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say, you know, I don't want to say it's impossible for them to beat Utah, but I'm just going to say right now, if I had to assign a likelihood to it, I would say maybe 15%.
Gotcha. Okay. So then we move on. We have two rivalry games. We have two trophy games on the line, back-to-back weeks, right? After the Utah mm-hmm. game, you travel to San Jose State for the Valley Trophy. Knowing how San Jose State recruited and what Ron Gallagher is trying to do there, is this a potential trap gate game for Fresno State, or should Fresno State reasonably handle this team?
Well, I mean, last year the game ended up being maybe a little bit closer than it should have been, given that the Bulldogs were able to kind of lock things down early on and let them back into the game late. And then you have to remember that 2 years ago, the last time they were in San Jose, you know, that was when, you know, the last BCS bubble died, you know? So, you know, maybe all of those highly touted recruits aren't going to show up on the field right away. I still, personally, San Jose State as a dark horse to maybe bounce back into bowl eligibility. I guess right now I'd say that they're probably even, or at least close to even, from my point of view.
Interesting. And then the next game at San Jose State. So you go from San Jose to San Diego State.
Well, I mean, I guess the nice thing is that they aren't traveling too far from home early on in the conference schedule, but really, you know, I'm expecting San Diego State to have a really good defense, like they always do. It's a defense that's frustrated the Bulldogs the last couple of years. 2 years ago, they almost upset, Derek Carr. And last year, you could make the argument that the only reason the Aztecs didn't win that game is because they had to rely on a freshman quarterback. So, going on the road to San Diego isn't going to be an easy task. If you ask me right now, when I wrote about the schedule analysis, I had it as a loss.
Okay, so you're going into five games in, right? You've got theoretically a 2-3 team or a 1-4 team going into Utah State, going at home, and then you have a stretch of three games. Four games. Utah State, UNLV, at Air Force, and then home again versus Nevada. So this is three out of four games are at home in this case. And really, Utah State, I'm not sure if you guys can pull out a win. UNLV, you should win, but yet last year you lost. So, I mean, how do you account for that? How do you account for, you having a seemingly – you shouldn't have any problems with these UNLV, Air Force, Nevada, but how do you account for not having that, and what will this team do? I mean, could we theoretically be seeing Utah State Fresno State at a 3-7?
I mean, it wouldn't shock me if that were the case. The upside is that you do get those two home games, especially against a really tough Utah State team. But, I think what I wrote about a month ago is that, if they lose those first two conference games on the road, the season might be over by the time they get to UNLV. Because, if they come home and get rolled by the Aggies, you're looking at an 0-3 start to conference play and an 0-2 start in the division. And then where do you go from there?
I was totally expecting you to continue with the tone in your voice, but that's okay.
Sorry.
I'm so confused because then after the Nevada game, you travel twice, first to Hawaii, then to BYU, and then you finish out the season at home versus Colorado State. Now, feasibly, that's two games against two really good mountain teams that you're getting at home in Utah State and Colorado State. But I mean, how do you finish off the season? This is what's extremely confusing about Fresno State, is this team could easily go 6-6. If somehow they surprise everybody, they could easily go 10-3, or we could feasibly see them at a really bad, like I said, 3-win season.
I went back and I double-checked what I wrote. And what I wrote was that, you'll know exactly what kind of team this is by the end of October. By the time they host Nevada, you're going to know whether this is a competitive team or a bad team. And if they're a bad team, I wouldn't take anything for granted in November. Nevada's, may have had they had a good season last year, and they may be losing Cody Bajardo, but, I kind of like Tyler Stewart a little better than I like Zach Greenlee. going to the islands is always an adventure, even for really good Fresno State teams. And, going to BYU after that, if Taysom Hill is healthy, that has the potential to be a disaster game if the team is kind of, thrown in the towel at that point. And then coming home to host Colorado State's really going to kind of be irrelevant. Because I expect Colorado State to be pretty good in their own right. Worst case scenario, this thing can go south really quickly. And if that happens, it's going to be really hard, I think, for the team to rebound going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. So we kind of gone through the schedule, kind of settled our thoughts. What is this team? I mean, is this feasibly a 6-6 team? Is this we have 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. So we do have 12 teams. 12 games this year. Is this team going 6-6? Is this team? I mean, are they going to surprise everybody? Are they going to all of a sudden go undefeated? I mean, what are we? What is this team? Do you have a record prediction for us?
Well, when I wrote the schedule analysis, I projected 6-6, and I think that's realistically that's the best case scenario because, you know, you're looking at guaranteed wins. What I wrote down, guaranteed wins, I had three of them. I had Abilene Christian, I had UNLV, and then for whatever reason, I put Nevada. I'm not totally sure why. And then as far as guaranteed losses, I put Ole Miss, Utah, San Diego State, and BYU. And then everything else is kind of a toss-up. But I could see them losing every single game on that schedule if things don't break right. Like, if Max Wittick is better for the Warriors than everybody expects them to be, if, you know, if they can't solve the Falcons' triple option, if they can't, you know, if they can't slow down JoJo Natson and Hunter Sharp, you know, this is a defense that gave up a lot of big plays last year, and I have a feeling there's more playmakers left in the conference than we might think. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Bulldogs get victimized a couple of times and lose heart.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have, at this point, I want to agree with you. I want to say 6-6, but realistically, I'm looking at this. I'm going to say 4-8 right now. And I think you're right. I think those guaranteed wins are going to come. I think Abilene Christian is going to be a win. I think UNLV is going to be a win. I think Nevada is going to be a win. And I think, and you're going to laugh at me, I think San Diego State's going to be a win at San Diego State, but I think Hawaii is going to be a loss.
Well, see, what's really interesting, and what I keep pointing out every opportunity I get, is that it's not like Fresno State's the only team with quarterback questions in the Mountain West.
Yeah, it seems like there are a lot of people with quarterback questions this year.
So, you know, Bulldogs had some success last year in when they were able to, you know, face quarterbacks in, you know, less than ideal situations. Like, they beat quarterbacks like, you know, Akaika Woolsey, and, you know, they were able to shut down Joe Gray, and they were able to overwhelm Nick Bowden, and, you know, they were able to shut down New Mexico after halftime, really, and, you know, take Cole Gauchy and Lamar Jordan out of the game. So if a lot of these teams, or some of these teams, rather, end up going deep into the season with quarterback shuffles, you know, like San Jose State did last year, or, you know, if they face Utah State without Chucky Keaton, or, you know, if Wittick gets hurt and they have to go back to Woolsey, or if they're able to solve the Air Force triple option like they did a year ago against New Mexico, that's when you start to get more optimistic. It really comes down to how much defense can take a step forward, because they were kind of a disaster last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have about 10, a little under 10 minutes left, right? Is there anything else you want to talk about? I think we're pretty set on the Fresno State preview. Good job as always. That's why
you
are our top writer in Fresno State things.
As always.
So what else is there to talk about? I feel like if we end the show early, we just ruin the effect of me rambling for like the first 10 minutes and anything else that we could possibly be doing.
Did we get any questions on Twitter?
We have not gotten questions on Twitter. Funny enough.
That's disappointing.
It is disappointing.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you planning on watching the Major League Baseball draft tomorrow night?
Maybe. Who should we be looking out for from the Mountain West?
Well, you know, hopefully, you know, I'll be able to post something up whenever somebody gets selected. But I would actually be really surprised if there were anybody who was taken on the first day. You know, Nevada had a really good season, despite the disappointing end. And when I was looking at Baseball America, kind of researching this, what I found out is they had three players in the top 500, which I guess would be, maybe top 13, 14 rounds. Not too bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what I'll point out is that, you know, Nevada fans probably have the most to look forward to if they're going to follow it closely this weekend. They mentioned, you know, Austin Beiler, who I believe was one of the offensive player of the years. I know he was at least a Mountain West all-conference pick. They have him listed as a third baseman for whatever reason, although I'm pretty sure he played first base in TH most of the time. They also mentioned Ryan Howell, the second baseman, another all-conference pick, and Adam Witt. Although both of those guys, Howell was 375th overall, and Witt was 423rd, to make of that what you will. You know, the one guy who may get picked early on is actually a Fresno State guy, Taylor Ward, who is a catcher. He was rated the fifth best at his position by Baseball America. And he was actually rated 68th overall and the third best possible catcher by Fangraphs. You know, I don't know how closely you follow Major League Baseball at all.
I do. Quite closely, actually.
Yeah. And so then, you know, that he might be the one guy who's taken within the first day. But if that happens, I'd actually be really surprised. And, you know, if he doesn't go high enough, you know, he's always, you know, he's a junior. He could possibly come back next year, which, fingers crossed, I'd like to be able to see him play next year because I didn't get a chance this year. Another guy to keep an eye on for San Diego State fans is right-hander Bubba Darby, who I believe was the preseason conference pitcher of the year, and he was an all-conference selection at least 3 years in a row. So keep an eye out for him, too. Other than that, if anybody gets picked, I will try to keep our adoring fans posted on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Baseball, we are covering baseball. This is the second season we've covered baseball now?
Yeah, we're just trying to build upon that going forward, right?
Yeah. So speaking of covering different sports outside of football, what are your thoughts on, because I brought this up with Jeremy and an email in a chat. What are your thoughts on expanding coverage to our other Mountain West sports, such as soccer, and more specifically women's soccer or women's volleyball?
Well, I mean, I'm never going to say that's not a bad. I'm never going to say that it's a bad idea. You know,
it's a good idea.
Obviously, I mean, you have to hope that there's fans of all these different Olympic sports out there. And if they're looking for, you know, a place to learn more about that stuff, you know, definitely feel free to leave us some feedback. Let us know, hey, we want more softball coverage. Hey, we want tennis coverage or women's basketball. You know, that's been real competitive the last couple of years.
It really has. And one of the reasons why I bring up women's soccer is we've actually had a pretty good women's soccer team, you know, throughout the Mountain West history. If you remember the BYU teams previously, the New Mexico's always had a good team. UNLV, even though they play in the WAC, has had a good men's team. Has had a fairly decent women's team as well. So, you know, we have these players, especially with the Women's World Cup right now.
Yeah.
And we have a few of these players who played at UCLA and Long Beach State and everything like that. Well, why can't any of them come from the Mountain West? And the Mountain West has, like I said, some good teams, and not just necessarily, like I said, in soccer, but we also have them in softball as well. We had San Diego State winning the tournament for again, and then going to NCAA this year. So, you know, if you want, and this is going to be kind of my final note, if you want to write for us, we're looking to expand our coverage. We've got football, we've got basketball, we've got baseball, and we're always looking to expand on those kinds of writers. But we're also looking into going into volleyball, soccer, men and women's, both men and women's volleyball, swimming and diving, if that's what you're interested in and you want to cover it, right? Softball. What other sports can you think of, Matt?
Well, I got the list of championships from this last year right in front of me.
Nice.
Cross country, men and women's, won by New Mexico this past season. Women's soccer, like you said, won by San Diego State, both regular season and tournament. Women's volleyball was won by Colorado State. Swimming and diving, like you mentioned, San Diego State won that tournament. track and field, New Mexico seemed to own that as well. In women's basketball, Colorado State won the regular season title, obviously, and then Boise State got the trip to the dance. Golf, tennis, softball, track and field, all those things.
Absolutely, and we could use riders and we could use coverage. Those some people, those are interesting sports, and they're fun sports to watch, you know, especially if you go to a live game. So I'm going to leave it on that. That is Matthew Kennerly at MattK_FF, correct?
Yes, it is.
Twitter? It is, and I'm going to check your Twitter feed as of right now. You have 400 followers, 401 followers. So let's
that's how many people I'm following.
Oh, that's how many
that's
people you
following.
You have 136
following.
Followers.
Yes.
136. Well, let's get them to 150, folks. That's once again at MattK_FF. I am at Greek Padre. I've got 439 followers, so, you know, not important either. We can't all be Jeremy Mouse.
Lucky.
Our website, www.mwcconnection.com. At MWC Connection for Twitter. Follow us, SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio if you are listening live. Thank you very much. And obviously we're going to have this downloaded and up for a podcast soon as well. And that is it. Any last moments? Any last words?
No, I'm good.
I'm just trying. 60 seconds. Okay, awesome. Well, I guess that's it. Have a good day, everybody.
Right,
have a good evening.